Welcome to Design Oracles. We are here to pontificate, evangelize, and educate you on residential interior design and architecture.
I'm Amity Worrell, interior designer of Amity Worrell & Company.
And I'm Diane Kett, architect of DK Studio.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to Design Oracles. I'm Amity.
Diane, hello.
And we have a very special visitor today, a guest, Lynn Brotman. And I was so excited to meet you. I found you because of your school, Fiber Arts School, and visited you in your studio. And I think I bought 6 pieces of art while I was there in the 1 hour I was there. I was very happy. I think I almost cried at one point. You have beautiful work. I got to see you weaving a rug, which was very emotional for me and beautiful. And so one thing that the season we're talking about in our podcast is materiality and materials. And so we were looking for someone who would be able to talk to us about materials and fiber and fabric. And I know that you work with a lot of other types of materials too. But just as a way of introduction, that was I was impressed by, you know, some of the pieces I bought from you were paintings. Another was a gourd that you had woven into, and so I was just really excited by how much knowledge you have about all these different materials. So thanks for being here.
Thank you. I guess it shows that I really love what I do. Mm-hmm. So I use perhaps it's best if I really explain fiber art.
Yes.
I consider fiber art a fine art. And it's gained such momentum lately in the past couple of years. But it includes all different types of textiles, fabric, yarn, synthetic and natural fibers. And it is all about the materials when you're looking at different techniques and how those materials are woven into each other and how they play off of each other. So it's an art form that allows you to use symbols and colors and convey all different types of meanings, emotional, and it's you know, it's quite warm when it's used in homes, and I find that people who are new to this that are starting to collect or purchase, but it has really found its place in contemporary art in the U.S. and around the world.
I mean, I think we were just looking at something yesterday with a client that was kind of a mix of a bunch of different fibers and how they integrated it together.
And tell us about your background and what brought you to start the school here too, because that was interesting to hear about.
Well, I actually started at a very young age. My mother ran an Asian art gallery in Dallas, Texas called Harbinware Art. And from the time I was 6 years old till I was even, you know, till probably I was 27 or 28, I worked in the gallery. I did the appraisals on Japanese woodblock print. And as I did that, I became obviously more aware of the type of fabrics that the women were depicted weaving and wearing, and it fascinated me. And I went on to other things. I went off to college, and but I came back into another door as a buyer for catalog companies, but I had a calling, and I remembered those prints and the effect on it. And I, after many years in a corporate environment, I left and decided that I was going to explore these different types of fabrics. And so that began the journey. Primarily, I started out quilting, and that was pretty funny because I had no concept of quilting. I have been primarily self-taught, but I have studied with some of the most wonderful instructors all over the country, and I developed that into moving on to art quilts, so pieces that actually have perhaps a specific message. Mine happened to be political messages, and these were quilts that were not meant for use. They were to be hung on the wall and different, and eventually I was able to study with a wonderful teacher, Jane Dunwald, in San Antonio, Texas. And she had a two-year program, a master program. She limited that program to 12 students every 2 years, and I was lucky enough to be in that program. And I learned to dye, and I learned the different fabrics. I learned how to mix all the chemicals that are involved in making those dyes work, and composition. And so I, you know, as I said, I studied with other instructors, Paula Nadelstern in New York, and so it gave me an opportunity to really expand my knowledge base. And I still take classes to this day. Of course, in running the Boston School of Fiber Arts, I bring in instructors from all over the world to teach in Boston. And I had the opportunity to learn from these instructors as well.
That's wonderful. And you were inspired to do that because of your travels around and wanting to bring something like that to Austin. Is that correct?
As I mentioned earlier, people are still being introduced to fiber arts. It's not just your grandmother's knitting and crochet, and it's not what has always been considered women's work.
Right.
Right down through history. But it is, of course, expanded, and it has appealed to so many different people who want to learn this, go further than perhaps what they consider traditional fiber arts, like knitting and quilting and so forth. So my work entails what I call surface design, which means you're taking fabric and you're laying it out and you're dyeing it with all different types of dyes, synthetic dyes, and now so much more botanical dye, which is all the rage right now. And you are stamping the fabric, you're printing the fabric, you are transferring designs to the fabric, your own designs. And that's the beauty of it. I work with wax, like in boutique. And so there's so many, speaking of materials, there's so many different materials that are in my studio that help me make those fibers come to life.
It occurs to me that it would be so interesting to do what you do, because it's sometimes it might just be about curiosity, like what happens if I apply, you know, wax to this and then add the dye and then melt the wax off and then get a hammer out and hammer it, and then I sew into it. And but I was really taken by that.
Well, because it's I did a residency in Sardinia in Italy a year ago, October. And I went there to learn a special technique called paibionis, which means little grapes in Italian. And there are only five to six women on this island who are noted workers in paibionis weaving. but what also sparked my curiosity is that many of the artists there call their studios laboratories.
Ah, interesting.
Right, of course.
As we are combining chemicals to make the colors vibrant and to make the colors stick and be color fast. So there are so many different things that we rely on, and they're all interwoven. I can use one chemical on this type of fabric, on a protein fabric like wool, or I can use a different type of the mordant. And mordant simply means, in French, it means to bite. And what that does is you can dye it, say, with sunflower leaves or marigolds, but you need something to make it bite the fabric so that it stays and doesn't wash out. And those are the type of things that I'm not a chemist, but some days I feel like I'm in my laboratory and I'm boiling water and I'm making lots of trouble.
So one other piece in particular I wanted to ask about, because it's a material we haven't brought up yet, is I was coveting and wanted to buy, which you wouldn't sell me, by the way, a piece of leather that you had dyed. I'm kidding. It's fine. You might eventually sell it to me. A piece of leather that you had dyed with botanicals, and it was just absolutely otherworldly.
If you can imagine, you know, people pressing flowers in between the pages of a book, but what if they could have and had known also how to make the impressions of those flowers show up on the paper itself.
Mm-hmm.
And so you use the flowers, certain flowers dye well. Roses do not dye well. But so you experiment what flowers, what leaves will print on leather. And that happened to be my first leather printing. That was why I had trouble parting with it. I just received a heat press in the studio 3 days ago, and now rather than steaming and dyeing and hours of heat and buckets of water, I can now learn to do this on a heat press, just like you would printing a t-shirt. It's a sublimation process. So again, another piece of machinery in my studio that helps me make the definition of the flowers and the dye stronger. And so there will be more leather coming your way.
So with the wax, do you pour like hot wax on fiber, or do you mix it with some materials?
Actually, you can stamp with wax on certain types of stamps. And I had an instructor, Basale Adiemo from Nigeria, who came and taught a workshop on Nigerian batik, which they actually create their own brush out of foam, and they draw with the wax on the fabric. And it's so appealing, at least particularly to me, because the symbology that they use on the fabric. So you're drawing those designs on the fabric. And they may use the same techniques in Indonesia, but I think they use more stamps, and they actually use a drawing tool that you put in the wax in a reservoir and hold it over the fabric, and you can release the wax to draw the design.
Just to back up a little bit, if someone doesn't know what batiking is, can you walk us through what that means? Because we've used that word a couple times. And
I'm sorry, right off the top of my head, I don't know what the word itself means. I believe it's an Indonesian word, but It's using wax, applying wax to fabric as a resist. And what that means is wherever you apply the wax, no color, it masks the fabric, no color can reach wherever that mask is. So when it's all said and done and you dye the piece with the wax, with the wax on the fabric, it will give you a beautiful design. Now you have all these white places on your fabric design where you can put a particular color that you didn't include at first. So that then layers colors on the ticket. That's what makes the color so exciting. Many people think of batik as the crackle technique on fabric, which is very much so used in Nigeria and Indonesia. But it is a this technique.
That's great. Thank you. And I think Martha Stewart taught us that a little bit with her Easter egg dyeing back in the 90s. Remember, she was having us do designs in wax, and then you put it in the hot water and melt it off. And yeah, I still do that every year. So also weaving, if you could give us, I know we would just love to hear what different types of weaving and what you like to do. And I understand, too, I'll add into that, that you dye your own yarns and maybe even make your own yarns. Yeah.
I do weaving. I learned not on a big floor loom, but on a what's called a Sayori loom, which is a Japanese loom. It was originally built for people who were disabled, particularly in wheelchairs, so that they could rope towards the loom and it would hold their seating in place while they were weaving. Of course, as we know, in that case, art is therapy.
Yeah.
So it was very much started out that way, and the woman who developed it in Osaka went on to introduce this loom into the world for other people to use in whatever ways. It's called spontaneous weaving, where you sit down at a long loom, the width of a, you know, it could be 400 square feet, that, you know, horizontal bit of reach across as this loom, and you have a pattern when you work with a floor loom. So you're making patterns and you're weaving those patterns in. What appealed to me about the Japanese loom, Sayori, was that it's spontaneous weaving. So I sit in front of the loom, I gather wool, I have working wool, and I gather wool that I dye, and with special dyes called acid dyes, not as bad, not as dangerous as it sounds. Acid just refers to the use of vinegar when boiling the dye. And it is, and I pick different types of wool and colors as I work. I have no design in mind that I want to convey. It's all about the colors and the weaving of those colors and how they interact with each other. And the designs, if you choose to create with weaving. I did a residency in Oaxaca, Mexico, and a village called Teotihuacan with the Zapotec people. 5,000 weavers in this village.
Oh my gosh,
and I stayed there for 1 year. I studied on a residency, and then I went back the following year and worked as an apprentice to a weaver there. So those are big floor looms, and I learned how to weave on a larger loom had I chosen. But I love my Sayori. It gives me a lot of freedom. You know, I sit in a chair and weave on that loom, but it's the same method. It's just a very different style. It's a style they used during medieval times, although they worked on floor looms. vertical looms now used today, the Navajos being vertical looms. One loom that I learned when I was in Mexico was something called a backstrap loom, where the loom, one end of the whorl is tied to a tree, and you sit down on the ground, and you pull, create the tension by using your back and your arms to pull the tension to you, and that's how most weaving, a lot of weaving, I should say, that started out, particularly in Mexico and South America.
One thing you showed me too, was I was there, was your silk. Talk to us about that, because that was a moment where interior design and your process meet.
Yes. I dye on silk chamois, which is sort of the Mercedes of fabrics, the Cadillac of fabrics, whatever. And it's a beautiful silk, and it's wonderful to use in wearable art. So I make a piece that you can pull over your head, much like a shawl, except it encompasses all of your body. But it can be used in interior design as dyed. I use a technique called ice dyeing, which is actually a very simple technique, but it gives you fabulous results, where you're laying ice on top of the fabric and sprinkling the dye is on that on the ice.
Oh my gosh!
And the ice melts, and it basically stains the fabric, and it's color fast. And I make scarves using that method, and I use dyes. I use wax to create on silk scarves. So it's a beautiful, beautiful fiber to work with.
It is beautiful. It has a sheen to it that is just gives light back into the room. It's beautiful.
Right. And when you use it in a room, it can be framed. It can be hung like a quilt would be hung in a room, or a macrame weaving can be hung in a room. So it's very versatile. Fabric is very versatile in a home.
I wondered if it could be used as a curtain.
Absolutely.
Like a drapery panel.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I have made curtains working with interior designers and pillow covers using silk chamois as well as weavings, wool that I had dyed. So it lends itself in the home to be used in many, many ways. In design, bedspreads, curtains, whatever you fancy.
Well, I was just thinking, you have a background in anthropology, so I'm just wondering, how does that inform your work? And then you talked about symbols, and I'm always loving to get books and learn more about symbols and rugs and art and all that kind of fun stuff.
Well, anthropology. Attending university, that I was able to have the opportunity to study different cultures and what was important, their different styles of art, but also, of course, their daily living and their social interactions with other people, which fascinates me. So I've been able to take that and translate it into the cloth that I work with.
Mm-hmm.
So many of the Japanese symbols, the Japanese crest that identify different families, like the Tokugawa and many others, and utilize that in my works or cultures, because I did study in Japan with a sensei, which is a Japanese master, and shibori, which unfortunately the West is called tie-dye. But I don't like that term. Shibori in Japanese means twist or ring. So you create it by sewing, created by wrapping, and a rashi, a hole. There's so many different techniques, and I studied with a sensei there for 6 weeks. And, you know, you can't help but use their symbols that have meanings to them in your work. And so it was the perfect medium to take the things that I learned in my anthropology classes and apply them in the way of symbols to my art.
I also loved that your wall hanging that was there in your studio that you had kind of, if I understand correctly, thought about in a high level kind of bird's eye view how communities interact with each other.
Sure. I have a fiber piece that I worked on the way to Mexico. Flew into Mexico City, take a 7-hour bus trip to Oaxaca, and I worked on it there. I worked on it when I wasn't reading. I mean, I'm consumed. And it was basically wrapping rope, coiling, might be the technical term you'd call it, and French knots. And I divided all the different colors with the coiling to explain the diversity in different communities. So each section of the piece represented the diversity of different communities, how we don't cross the lines, and how we can, you know, merge together communities and mix those different colors in a tapestry piece to use. So it lends itself to translating it into that art form. It includes tiny circular weaving that's done on a loom you hold in your hand. And so all of these things interact in the work that I create. If I'm weaving on a board, as you mentioned, and by the way, there are other types of fiber besides fabric. There's paper. It's a fibrous material. Wood is a fibrous material. Baskets, the plants, and the material used for baskets is weaving. And all of these are I keep going back to this word, no pun intended, interwoven, because that's what I do. I weave on the boards. And I did a special piece where the center was cut out of the board, and I used a term called Tenerife, which is a Spanish technique of weaving, crossing threads, and I use linen thread when I do weaving on boards, and so that translates into weaving on a board, and it and it translates to the paper arts, making paper, weaving with paper, pop-up books with paper. All fiber art, all things we teach at our school. So it's all interconnected, the techniques. It's always, instructors have always said, you must create a body of work so that people can identify that that's your work. Well, I have tried that. I guess I'm a rebel, and I protested against that to some degree, and that I like the diversity. I'm a I like the diversity of using all the techniques with other different materials.
Maybe that is your identifying thing, is that it's the diversity that actually makes up who you are, and that keeps you interested and is what's interesting about what you do.
So what made you think about using the gourd as kind of, it seems like it's like the base of it, right?
Well, I love the gourd. Again, it has that sort of anthropology, cultural aspect to it. Because gourds have always been used down through the ages as wonderfuls in different societies across the world. And so that appealed to me much more so than, say, working in wood. And although gourds requires machinery, and you have to be able to carve the gourd, you have to use drills, Dremels, and power equipment, and all kinds of things I like to get my hands on. It opened up a different dimension to me, a 3D dimension, something you could pick up your hands, you could put on a shelf. So I use gourds. I also make, and just had an instructor from San Antonio come and teach a class on spirit dolls. That happens to be what I'm doing tomorrow, and teaching a class at the Georgetown Arts Center on making spirit dolls. And these are very anthropological types of things. Again, fertility dolls that represent Jungian therapy, and therapy of doll that is the compassionate mother, the hero man or woman. And so there are different archetypes that they represent, and I use fabric to translate that into something that people can relate to immediately. You have a visceral reaction to the face of a spirit doll and her clothing. It can be anything you want.
That is fascinating.
Wow, cool. Yeah, and the gourds, I would say, are almost like sculptures then, because like you said, they're so much more three-dimensional. Yeah.
Sculpture.
Mm-hmm.
Take fabric, and I have taken that and woven that around cord and sewn it and made fiber baskets. So it is very sculptural, and it there's just so much.
A lot of variety.
Gentleman in Japan who was kind enough, he worked in a sock factory all of his life, and he gave me fabric that he created that I brought back with me that is made from linen and paper. And he's the only person I've ever met. He doesn't sell it outside of Japan, this fabric. I made, when I returned, I made kimonos.
Oh, wow.
Fabric and the linen and the paper. So all of these materials can be combined. I've used gourd pieces, shards, I guess you'd call them, of gourds that I have left over from carving and incorporated into a weaving.
And I think one of the pieces I bought from you, maybe two of them were paper mixed with paint, mixed with fabric as well. So that's another moment where they all came together.
Painting on washi paper, Japanese paper. And you see there's a theme here, this Japanese theme that runs through my art, going back to the days when I was working with Japanese, strictly Japanese woodblock prints and other, and ceramics and so forth. So it's an opportunity to incorporate lots of different things into that.
Well, thank you so much for we appreciate you sharing all of this with us. I learned so much. Can you tell me Can you tell us again, one more time, tell us about their people's opportunities to find you and know who you are and take a class real quick, and then we'll wrap up?
Absolutely. You can find us online at the Austin School of Fiber Arts. That's ARTS.org. We are a nonprofit, so our mission is to teach people about traditional fiber arts and also explain and expand their knowledge into the various art forms, paper, boards that we talked about here today. So people, I bring in instructors from all over the country. People come from all over the country, from Maine, California, Kansas, to learn these techniques. These are master instructors, but you don't have to be a master artist.
That's good.
People who are just starting out and beginning can learn from these people. And the classes are on through the year. We're on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook. So you can always find our classes online at our school. And, check any fiber artist. They may have been an instructor, a master instructor at the school.
Well, thank you again, Lynn. We so appreciate you taking time to be here. We appreciate it.
Yeah.
If I could mention my phone number real quick.
Yeah.
201-315-9110. And you can contact me directly at contact@austinschoolofiberarts.org.
All right. Cool.
Thank you, Lynn.
Thank
you. Have a wonderful day. Thanks for all. Right. Enjoy. Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Can we have her do the introduction again, at the very beginning?
Lynn, can you do your very beginning introduction again? We have to re-record it. We had a sound issue. So I asked you at the beginning to just tell us who you are, what your name is, and all of that. Hi, Lynn. Could you tell us a little bit about yourself and what you're doing here today? What's special about you?
Mm-hmm. My name is Lynn Brotman. I am a fiber artist here in Austin, Texas, and I have a studio. I've been in Austin for 10 years. I'm a native, a third generation Texas native, and I run this studio out of Austin, creating different forms of artwork with fiber, and that includes a whole gamut of different types of fiber. And I'm also the executive director and founder of the Austin School of Fiber Arts.
Great. Thank you so much, Lynn.
Thank you for listening to Design Oracles with Amity Worrell, owner of Amity Worrell & Company, and Diane Kett, owner of DK Studio.